Sean, do you know what a witch's favorite poetry style is?
Her poetry style is cacophony.
That's very good. But no, it is not correct. It's a hexastitch. Now, I'm sorry. I had to interrupt the music. Now. Hexastitch, that's seven-line poetry.
Is it really? I've never heard of it.
Hexastitch.
Hexastitch. Okay.
We'll be talking about...
I'll take your word for it.
Now, the others you've enlightened me about, but I did not hear or know of Hexastitch. But I thought that's got to be a witch's favorite type of poetry.
Okay.
Hexastitch.
All right. Oh, you just made that up.
I did not. Hexastitch is seven lines. This is what happens, listeners, by the way. Hello. You know, I'm back. We're back. This is what happens when you're so good at fabricating. No one believes you. You know, I've had this all my life.
You know? I just like my answer better.
Well, yours is good too. It's inaccurate, but it's very good.
You know? What?
Oh, goodness. Well,
hey, everybody.
Hey, guys.
Welcome to Wacky Poem Life.
Welcome. You know, you'll have to forgive me. I'm decompressing from 40,000 foot elevation flying to and from New Mexico. So you need to bear with us. Bear with me, at least.
It's really not that far away from Oklahoma, but it's a totally different landscape,
isn't
it?
Very different. Yeah, very different. Yes, mountainous and cool and cold and not a lot of trees. Big skies, no trees.
Yeah. Well, we're at episode 110.
110, that's a good number.
I believe, yeah.
110.
I don't really have a working title for this one, so we'll see what we come up with afterwards. I mean, I wrote down Kids and Creativity.
Kids and Creativity.
That's not going to be our title because that's way too boring.
Something will crop up, you know.
Plus, I have tons of notes about cereal, so that's going to come in.
That's kind of making me hungry. I'm kind of thinking about Saturday mornings in front of the TV with Looney Tunes.
Oh, yeah.
Looney Tunes and Scooby-Doo and H.R. Puff and stuff and all that good stuff.
I do have some notes about some old retro cereals. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Lots of sugar. And some were so crunchy they would cut your gums, like the Captain Crunch.
Yeah.
You know, guaranteed to make your gums bleed before it gets soft.
So I am Sean.
I'm Bill.
And we come to you every week, as you know, if you've been listening to us, thank you, from the Rural Oklahoma Museum of Poetry in Locust Grove, Oklahoma. And we talk about poems that people have left in this very interactive museum sometimes. And sometimes we just have different topics that appeal to us or something pops up in the news or Bill goes to a yard sale.
Right. You know, it was a modified yard sale. It was really cool. Shall I elaborate on it, Sean?
Yeah, because while Bill was gone visiting family for a week, you were gone a week.
I was gone a full week, yeah.
Yeah, he sent me a text and with some pictures in it of some artwork, and that's what we're going
to
talk about
today. We were on our way to do some shopping, and we passed by my brother's house, lives in the middle of Albuquerque, in central Albuquerque, in a nice middle-class neighborhood with adobe houses. And we were driving down the street, and we passed a house where there was a little small and inconspicuous sign that said "Art for Sale" in a interesting writing on a box, and there was a little guy, 7 years old, sitting next to a little bench and with the table. So we thought we made a U-turn and stopped. We got to stop here.
That's exactly what I would do too. U-turn.
U-turn. Art for sale. You know.
So
we stopped. We stopped, and he kind of got excited because I think we might have been the first and only sale of the day.
Oh.
It was kind of cool. He had his hat and gloves on, but he had lots of his hand drawn and hand painted artwork for sale. Much of it landscapes. One was a chainsaw man, which was sort of graphic, but that's 7 year old.
Yeah.
We purchased one with a tree with many multicolored dots on it, and another one that had mountains and a multicolored sky. And I was really intrigued, and I said, his name was Keaton. And I said, what's the title of these beautiful artworks? He said, this one is All Seasons in One Tree, and the other one is New Mexico at Sky Time. I thought, oh my gosh.
Wonderful titles.
You are a genius. And if that just came off the top of your, rolled out of, because they weren't labeled.
Yeah.
If that came off the top of your head, you are a future poet, writer, or something.
Yeah.
So I immediately, I wrote it, I had a marker and I wrote it down in the back.
Mm-hmm. So, if you're listening to us and you're not at our website, make sure that you go over to wackypoemlife.com and you can see Keaton's pictures.
Yeah, I think Keaton, I believe.
Yeah, All Seasons on One Tree. It looks like he drew a tree, and then he's made all the little red and blue and green and yellow and orange blossoms with, I don't know, something circular.
Mm-hmm, something circular.
They're very uniform.
I have an autumn area, you know, a spring area, maybe a winter area.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought how brilliant it was that to come up with that name for this artwork.
Yeah, and I'd love to see a real tree like that.
Wouldn't it? Right, all seasons.
Tree.
The all seasons tree, yeah. But I thought, you know, he displayed qualities that I thought were so important. He reminded me of myself in the fact that I was drawing all the time as a little kid, and things I shouldn't be drawing on, books and encyclopedias and things like this, and drawing and painting and sketching. And I think it helped me to A, read, and B, write.
Mm-hmm.
Those incredibly important.
They do all go together.
They all go together. And I asked, how much are these masterpieces? He said, well, not less than 5 for one, and not more than 10 for two. And I thought, again, brilliant. We get to negotiate. We get to negotiate, or we get to just pay you what we think is
their
worth.
That is funny. He didn't have a fixed price, but he had parameters.
He had parameters. So, you know, he didn't want to discourage us. You know, we could make offers, or we could. So we paid the higher end of that.
Right.
And I gave a gratuity because I said, they're so brilliant, you know. But he went and ran to his mom with the money. He said, Mom, I sold some. And he said, now I have enough. I gave him some money and tip. Now I have enough to buy a sketchbook and paints.
Oh,
and I thought,
awesome.
That is so much like me, you know. And as you know, I am childless, but my twin sister has children and grandchildren. But I thought, if I had this is my spirit child. You know, this is the child I wish I could have, you know, had and raised and watched mm-hmm. grow and develop and create. But I just thought that was a brilliant example of how visual creativity can foster and nurture written creativity.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And how important that is to a child's self-esteem, mm-hmm. Mental development, mm-hmm. social development.
Yeah. And I wonder...
Everything.
I wonder, Sean, you know, he was 7 at the most. He was quite small. His mother was very close by, so it was safe. But I wonder if... I seem to think... I remember events when I was very young that are vivid. And I think he may remember the fact that he made these sales.
I think he will.
And it will. Yes. It's important to foster these mm-hmm. these children who have these really brilliant skills. And I love the fact he didn't have a cell phone in his hand while he was waiting on customers.
Right.
He was organizing organizing them and watching traffic. And it was so refreshing. It was like a step back in time before mm-hmm. the electronic devices just sucked little ones in.
Right. So. And it's important, too, because what you said, you think he'll remember it. He will remember that there was value seen mm-hmm. by a total stranger in his art.
Yes.
And that's extremely important,
yes.
too.
And he'll want to create more mm-hmm. as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. So which just continues with what I was saying about the importance of the creativity in art for any child's development in every area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you said that you drew a lot and painted and things like that when you were a child.
All the time.
I did too. I remember drawing a lot, but I did more, and I wrote a lot too, of course. But I think I did a lot more of other things that I would just categorize as creative play. And it's similar, you mm-hmm. know, like mm-hmm. I got made fun of. I'm still made fun of to this day. I'm 61 years old.
Who dares?
Creating bug cemeteries in the backyard. But that was a very expressive and interesting.
We had funerals for
creative
for insects.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I had a bunch of little matchboxes, and I didn't go out and kill animals. Mm-hmm. I found little flies that were dead mm-hmm. or, you know, moths and things like that. And I put them in their little matchbox and I dug a hole for them and, you know, made little markers for them.
I think that's
I had a bug cemetery.
That is very creative. Yeah. I have never, ever heard of a bug cemetery before. And now it's out there. Everyone's going to want to create one or, you know, talk about it.
I remember, I made fun of this to this day for sitting on the roof and writing poems.
Oh, my goodness.
And sticking them under the tiles of the roof.
And to this day, they're probably still there.
Yeah, and I don't know if I've mentioned this before on this podcast. I don't really think I have, but I actually have a little note from 1974. It's dated July 18th, 1974, and I wrote on this little pink piece of paper, "I won't grow up. I swear it by the light of Tinkerbell and the shadow of Peter Pan."
Oh, nice.
And I signed it in blood.
In blood. Now, where's that?
So I've never had a chance.
Well, and you know what I like about that note? It has come to pass. You are not grown yet. You're not grown up yet.
Well, yeah, because that's the thing. We're talking about how important the creativity and creative play and art and all those things are for children.
Yeah.
But don't lose them either. Keep doing them.
Yeah, keep the sense of wonder.
Yes.
And excitement. Yes.
Yeah, and if you need to, any young people out there listening, write yourself a little note like that and sign it in your blood.
In your blood.
Yeah, I mean, I just made a little nick in my thumb, you know, and
That's serious. If you're going to bleed over your note, I'm going to bleed over this, you know. Yeah.
But it's
very Peter Panish. He did not want to grow up. He wanted to stay young and youthful, and and he did.
Mm-hmm. I actually think this line that I wrote on this paper is from one of those little teenage novels that were so popular back in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
It was called The Peter Pan Bag.
Okay.
And there was a character in there, and I think she wrote something like that. I think that's where I stole that idea.
Yeah.
She was never going to grow up.
Yeah. And I like the island that Peter Pan visited with the Lost Boys were on there?
Oh, yeah. They were never growing up,
They never grew up either, and they had some had fox ears and wolf tails, and I thought, I want that. That was very much like where the wild things are. I want the ear and the tails, and I want to have the claws and be on the island and our own little world.
And then go home at night and eat your dinner.
Yeah, because I don't want to do without food or a bed.
No.
I want the best of both worlds.
No. Speaking of food.
Oh, yeah.
So I was talking about cereal.
Cereal.
Yeah. And, Bill, do you know what happens when Chuck Norris pours milk on his Rice Krispies?
I think that they probably crackle in fear of his high kicks.
They're very quiet.
Don't say a word. Don't say a word. Yeah.
So cereal. The reason that I've been thinking about cereal with this topic is because I, of course, consulted my lover. The Online Etymology Dictionary, about creativity and the word create. And the word create means to bring into being or to grow, and it comes from the Proto-Indo-European root, ker, K-E-R, which means to grow. And it forms all or part of a bunch of words, one of them being cereal. So cereal and create have the same origin. And it also forms the word Ceres, C-E-R-E-S, which is the goddess of agriculture. And she was a very interesting woman. In ancient Roman religion, she was a goddess of agriculture, grain, crops, fertility, and motherly relationships. She was very high up in terms of the deities. She was one of the central deities in Rome's triad. And she was described as... Well, there was a 7-day festival for her, Cerealia, and it included Sirius's games, and she was honored in May at the fields and a festival they had there and at harvest time, and she's usually depicted as a mature woman.
Yeah.
Here's something I liked about what it described about the festival, that at her main festival, Cerealia, it's held in mid to late April. It opened with a horse race in the Circus Maximus, and then it continued on with there was a turning post at the far end of the circus, and that was sacred to the god of grain. And then after the race, foxes were released into the circus, their tails ablaze with lighted torches, perhaps to cleanse the growing crops and protect them from disease.
Ooh, now that part I'm not sure I like so much. I'm sure the foxes liked it even less.
I hope the flames got put out pretty quickly.
Well, right, because, at least it didn't kill them, but they sure probably had some stumps for tails.
Well, it reminds me of my sister's dog, Monty, though. We were sitting around a fire, a little campfire one night, and she's just this big old, she's part Mastiff, part golden retriever, I think.
Just a big reddish dog.
A big doofus dog. And she was sitting there just so close to the fire. And before we knew it, her tail was on fire. And she was still just sitting there. She did not even know her tail was on fire.
Now, who stopped, dropped, and rolled? Who noticed that we had a fire going? It's like, I smell hair burning. What's happening?
Yeah. And so we moved her away. And even, kind of after we put it out, she was just like, oblivious.
Why are y'all making such a big fuss over me? I enjoyed it. That's so funny.
Yeah, so that's why I was thinking about cereal, because that goes along with the
theme.
Creativity.
Right. So I had a question, but maybe I know the answer. All Seasons on One Tree was what Keaton had titled the painting, a monostitch, a one-line poem, a monostitch. I wonder if that might be considered a monostitch.
Are you spelling stitch S-T-I-T-C-H?
I believe that's what I looked up.
Okay.
And again, monostitch is a one-line poem. A couplet is a two-line poem. Tercet or triplet is a three-line poem.
Mm-hmm. Quatrain
is four. Hexastitch is seven. Hepastitch, eight. Okay. I'm not sure what five. Quintastitch? I didn't see it. I didn't anywhere.
Quintet.
Mm-hmm.
Septuplet.
But I thought, if you say the line, all seasons on one tree, you can visualize blossoms, gold leaves, green leaves, bare limbs, all on one tree.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that is where, if you can visualize it, if that makes a line poetic or, very indicative of poetry.
Yeah, it is. Sometimes here in Oklahoma, we have almost three seasons on a tree. Because there can be a little bit of green or, a little bit of a flower left.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. While some of the leaves have already turned.
Mm-hmm. And some of the branches are already bare.
Yeah. Interesting.
That's true. Yeah. Sean, do you know speaking of trees, what is a tree's favorite app?
A tree's favorite app.
App.
Yeah. It would be the leaf time.
Excellent guess, but no. A tree's favorite app is Timber, but that's kind of naughty.
Is that where trees go to meet one another?
That's where trees go to meet one another. Naughty. K-N-O-T-T-Y, that's a naughty app.
Oh, my gosh.
Timber. Okay. Y'all feel free to steal these because they are, they're not copyrighted, but they should be.
So. Bill, do you know what the sound is that witches make when they eat cereal?
Let me think. It's going to be crunch tinkle. Crunch, tinkle, crunch, tinkle, crunch, tinkle.
Snap, cackle, pop.
Of course it is. Snap, cackle, pop. We're on the theme, aren't we?
We are. Now, this is a poetry podcast,
right. All right.
And so your idea about creativity and child play and all of that made me think of a poem that's one of my favorite poems in the world. And I don't think I've shared it on here. And it's called The Centaur. It's by Mae Swenson. And, I'm just going to read it.
Okay, yes.
It's a little bit long, but, it is so worth it.
Okay.
The Centaur, Mae Swenson. The summer that I was 10, can it be there was only one summer that I was 10? It must have been a long one then. Each day I'd go out to choose a fresh horse from my stable, which was a willow grove, down by the old canal. I'd go on my two bare feet. But when, with my brother's jackknife, I had cut me a long, limber horse with a good thick knob for a head, and peeled him slick and clean except a few leaves for the tail, and cinched my brother's belt around his head for a rein, I'd straddle and canter him fast up the grass bank to the path, trot along in the lovely dust that talcumed over his hooves, hiding my toes and turning his feet to swift half-moons. The willow knob with the strap jouncing between my thighs was the pommel, and yet the pole of my nickering pony's head. My head and my neck were mine, Yet they were shaped like a horse. My hair flopped to the side like the mane of a horse in the wind. My forelock swung in my eyes. My neck arched and I snorted. I shied and skittered and reared, stopped and raised my knees, pawed at the ground and quivered. My teeth bared as we wheeled and swished through the dust again. I was the horse and the rider, and the leather I slapped to his rump spanked my own behind. Doubled, my two hooves beat a gallop along the bank. The wind twanged in my mane, my mouth squared to the bit. And yet I sat on my steed quiet, negligent, riding, my toes standing the stirrups, my thighs hugging his ribs. At a walk, we drew up to the porch. I tethered him to a paling. Dismounting, I smoothed my skirt and entered the dusky hall. My feet on the clean linoleum left ghostly toes in the hall. "Where have you been?" said my mother. "Been riding," I said from the sink, and filled me a glass of water. "What's that in your pocket?" she said. "Just my knife." It weighted my pocket and stretched my dress awry. "Go tie back your hair," said my mother. "And why is your mouth all green?" "Rob Roy, he pulled some clover as we crossed the field," I told her.
That is imagination.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, that is imagination. Yeah. And centaurs, what a fascinating creature.
Yeah. I mean, you could become the thing that you're imagining in your plays. That's a wonderful thing.
And you have no limits.
No.
There are no limits.
And the world just drops away, just disappears. It's kind of like, you know, as an adult, when you're doing things, probably you have this experience when you're doing something artistic. Mm-hmm. The world drops away, and the hours go by, and you have no sense of the rest of it.
Yeah. Well, and for me, maybe for you, the art of creating is the ultimate. It is the ultimate joy for me, aside from the love I have of my family and friends. Mm-hmm. That is the ultimate joy, is creating.
Yes.
And I wonder if Keaton realizes that his work of art here is the subject of a podcast. Of course he does not, but how he would find this so interesting, and maybe, you know, a little bit embarrassing, but the fact that a young one, his creativity spurred and spawned all of this.
Yeah. It's a validation.
Yeah, it's a validation of his imagination.
It does make me wonder, too, about this poem, because one of my very favorite, it's in the top five memories I have. I taught for many years, 25 years or so, I don't remember how many, high school and college. And I was teaching ninth grade, and which is the worst age of students to teach, let me tell you.
You speak from experience.
It's horrid.
Yeah.
But I was teaching ninth grade, and we were doing, I just wanted them to immerse themselves a little bit in poetry, like I do. And I put them into groups. I put this one class into groups, and I gave each of them a poem. And I said, "I want you to present this poem in some way to the class. I don't really care how you do it. I don't have, you know, guidelines for this. Present it to us in a way that we'll enjoy." And there were four girls in this group that had this poem, The Centaur, because this poem is in a lot of anthologies. Mm-hmm. And I will never forget what they did. It was very simple, but they talked amongst themselves. They divided it up. They took turns doing stanzas, and one would do a stanza, another, and then all four of them would read together on the next stanza, over and over to the end. And it was just like a mantra. It was a chant. They knew it perfectly, and it was just amazing.
And that was probably validation for you, you know, to say, this is really a way I've not experienced this poem before.
Yes. And the things that it made me think about here, like with your little artist, too, is I wonder if any of those girls remember that.
Yeah.
I suspect they do. Mm-hmm. But I would love to know for sure.
Did they carry it through? Did they keep the spark and never grow up? Like, I hope they never, fully never grow up. Keep that spark of childhood imagination and wonder.
Right. Because it was in the classroom, like I said, there's a ninth grade classroom where the boys are insane, totally insane, and half of the girls are too. And so, but it was very quiet. Mm-hmm. Everyone just, you know, in awe mm-hmm. of this, of their performance in this poem.
Yeah.
And I think they have to have remembered that.
Yeah. And that was their choice to divide and then to unify in their, mm-hmm. you didn't, that was not a specification.
I didn't give them any instructions. Some of them did, they did like, they depicted it with pictures. Mm-hmm. You know, they drew some pictures. There was, I think there was one group that made like little paper bag puppets or something. There was, when you give people, you know, you give people rein, mm-hmm. they will.
Creative freedom, they creative
will
license.
Let their creativity will come out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I've always said about teaching poetry to people too, is there's no magic lesson plan for that. You just have to have an environment where people can appreciate it and share it and, you know, immerse themselves in mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. I thought about, you know, is there any poem I can come up with for this tree? And I thought, there's nothing. I can come up with nothing better than All Seasons on One Tree.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, you know, he captured it.
Yeah.
You know,
and I mean, you could go on. You could make that the title of the poem and you could describe it a little
that's
bit.
True.
But,
that is true.
I mean, but that's the perfect way to think about what he's expressed visually here.
And, I can't specify or I can't emphasize enough the fact that he didn't have a title for this until I asked him.
That's I love that.
And then this came, you know, just like the other one. I could see the wheels turning, mm-hmm. and that's what he came up with. And
well,
I thought, brilliant.
And so how lucky was he that you were the person that came up to, you know, and asked him that? Because it probably had never occurred to him that someone would ask him what the title of that artwork was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most
people would
that.
Not have.
Yeah. But, you know, I made a point to tell him, these are really excellent. I said, mm-hmm. you're so creative. Mm-hmm. You know, I just feel like that. And I felt that's how I genuinely felt.
Of course.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was.
You're not fakey.
It was a moment.
You can't fake anybody out, Bill.
That's true. That's true. As my twin sister has known all my life, you know. Right.
Hey, do you know what you call a cereal box full of snakes?
I would say hissing flakes.
Nope, it's called honey bunches of
honey
nopes.
Honey bunches of nopes.
Honey bunches of nopes.
Of nopes.
Not doing it.
Yeah.
I looked because I bizarrely, you know, you give me creativity and I go to cereal. But I looked, I found this website where it listed some cereals from the 70s. And I only remembered one of these. One of them was Mr. T's. Do you remember Mr. T having a cereal?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
But I was more of a younger adult when that was popular.
Okay.
Yeah, I pitied the fool that don't eat this.
Well, it only lasted, that was in the 80s, actually. Okay.
Yeah.
Magic Puffs.
Magic Puffs. I remember Magic Puffs.
Magic Puffs. It said they came. That was the 70s, and they came with a magic trick inside mm-hmm. each box. Cereal used to come really cool.
Oh my goodness! Prizes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do remember this one, Crazy Cow.
Oh, no, I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was kind of like Cocoa Puffs because it turned your milk colors.
Yeah.
So Crazy Cow had a strawberry flavor, and it turned your milk.
I remember.
Pink.
That must have been an Oklahoma thing. We didn't have Crazy Cow in New Mexico. I don't know what we had. We had King Vitamin.
At one point in the late 70s, there was you could get Star Wars trading cards in the boxes of Crazy Cow.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, that would be collectible. Yeah.
And then this one called Waffalos.
Sounds vaguely familiar, like Tiny Waffles.
Tiny Waffles,
yeah.
Yes. The you need to look this up because the cover of the box has a horse playing a guitar on it, which I don't understand at all.
Well, you know, I think the people that were creating the illustrations probably were smoking some stuff to get creative, you know.
But that was Waffalos. That was cereals.
Waffalos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably mapley and syrupy all at the same time. Yeah.
But, you know, we sat down to our very sugary cereals back in the day, and then we went out into the world on our sugar high.
And we ran it off.
We did.
We ran it off, you know. Yes, worked it off.
With our creative play, some of those things I was saying about the creativity and why it's so important for kids is from a PBS article that I was looking at. And one of the things that they mentioned was, I think the article is mainly geared toward teachers and maybe parents too, but they keep emphasizing that the adult should stimulate or, you know, introduce the play element but not control it.
Mm-hmm. Good, that's good advice.
Yes, because that makes me think of all of these competitive sports that we have in grade school now.
Yeah.
So the kids just aren't playing out there in the playground anymore. They're competing mm-hmm. with one another. Mm-hmm. And then the parents go apeshit. Mm-hmm. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
Crazy.
We'll bleep that out, folks.
When they have games with others mm-hmm. and the whole idea of the, you know, creative play is just gone.
Because when you have competition, someone is at the bottom of that situation.
Yeah.
And then there's that feeling of I don't know if it's shame or whether it's embarrassment because I can't compete at that level. And that's mm-hmm. wrong.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a time for that.
Right. Well, and it's the control element, too, is that you feel like you're being controlled in what you have to do, and you have to do it a certain way to win. And so there's no more problem solving, you know, or just kind of creatively thinking outside the box. You have a set of rules and you got to follow them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's fine for when you get older. But
yeah. Yeah, but when you're young, whatever. Play. My great nephew wanted me to play Fortnite, and which is a war game. Or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what, little nephew? Oh, I said, you know what? I would rather play Uno, and I'd rather play Yahtzee, board Yahtzee. And I'd like you to kind of show me how, because I've forgotten. I didn't forget. I've forgotten the categories. We had the most fun.
Yes.
Physically interacting, right. And there was a little bit of competition, but it was so much fun.
Yes.
The physical act of playing instead mm-hmm. of just watching a screen and controlling a whatever that, I don't know what you, the game pad.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I don't know what any of that's called.
Yeah. Right. We don't know. We're old school. You know, we had sugar cereal and, you know, bicycles and, yeah.
I might still be able to run an Atari Pong game, but that's about it.
Pong was interesting, wasn't it? Today, that'd be considered like mega slow motion to kids today. They'd be glazing over as that little square hits the wall and back again. You know, I remember the sound even.
All right. Well, I thank you so much, Bill, for stopping at that yard sale and buying the artwork and encouraging a young artist. And because I enjoyed this topic too.
Yeah. Well, and his name. I want to thank Keaton for having the sale. I hope he made some money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so much fun. And I'm glad to have that little seed planted, and now we're going to let it grow.
That's right.
Yeah.
So thank you all for being with us, and share the word, because we don't know who you are. Or
yeah, let us know.
How many of you are out there? We don't know.
There could be minions. Minions and minions.
Well, I posted on Facebook today. It was kind of a pathetic post. I said, I don't know why more people aren't listening to us.
Yeah.
And someone commented that I had no idea that she says she's listened to almost every episode. And I thought, well, that's wonderful.
Well,
thank you, Jesse. Thank
yes,
you, Jesse.
Absolutely. You know, let us know.
It is hard. It is hard. You know, you get used to it as an artist and a writer of doing things and never getting any feedback on them. But, you know, it's nice
to get
feedback once in a while.
I call it the Van Gogh syndrome. You create these masterpieces.
Don't make us cut off our ears, people.
No, but you know, long after we're no longer in existence, they'll say, this was brilliant. We should have sponsored this for a few million. Yeah. No, I'm kidding.
I'm not.
You're not? Yeah. Kidding, but not.
All right. Yeah. Well, thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
Donna Doggy.